What is up, everybody?
Welcome back to Mile Higher Podcast.
Today we've got episode number 32. And what are we talking about today?
We are talking about something that's actually been really highly requested, and that is the mysteriousness. Is that even a word?
Mysteriousness? Yes.
Surrounding all of these people that have gone missing in national parks.
Or on just wild lands, federal lands, things like that.
Yes, national land.
Yeah, across the country.
Yes, and there's a very large amount of them. And you guys have asked so many times. So we're doing it today. And it is really going to be an interesting episode because there's a lot of things to just ponder. You know, like there's a lot of open-ended things here.
Very open-ended. There's not a lot of conclusions that are going to be drawn today because there's so many possibilities. And I think I'm honestly surprised we haven't done this sooner because this takes place. Actually, some of the cases we're covering take place in our backyard practically in Rocky Mountain National Park, which we've been to many times. I've been there probably far too many times, but we are going to talk about all of that today. But before we jump into that today, just want to quickly thank all of the fans out there for the support, all the patrons out there. We really appreciate you guys. You guys are helping us get a new studio so we can get out of this bedroom and into a real studio space with more room.
It's going to be awesome. And we have a vlog of it too. If you guys, I know some of you probably don't know this, but we do have a vlog channel that we post occasionally on, and we're trying to post on it more. But I just posted a little vlog about the beginning of the renovation of the new podcast studio, so you can check that out. If you just type in Mile Higher Life on YouTube, it'll come up.
Which, yeah, is the name of our vlog channel now. Yes. And if you go and watch, we'll be posting, you know, different stages of the progress of the construction. Like tomorrow they start laying the new floors and stuff. Mm-hmm. We've got new furniture. We've got a sweet, the new sign is going to be like amazing. I don't think you understand how cool it's going to look. And I'm excited. Just going to really make this feel like, I don't know, just a whole nother level higher.
Mile higher.
That's right, baby. Mile higher. We're taking the studio a mile higher.
For real, this will give us the opportunity to interview people. One person in particular we were hoping to interview is David Politis, who is part of this story today. He's been hugely involved in this whole
411 project.
Missing 411.
Written a number of books. He's the one who put together the documentary, which I'm sure a lot of you have either seen or heard about, which we actually just watched last night. And so he's heavily involved with this, and he actually lives in Colorado, which is even more convenient. So
of course, definitely we want to have him. We'd be honored to have him on our podcast. That'd be fascinating. So,
because
we can't really hit him up right now. Be like, Mr. Politis, want to come sit on our lap because we have no room?
It would literally be like, you could just stand between us. Amigos. Just stand against the green screen, just right here. Be like, hello, sir.
But soon, hopefully, you know, hopefully by like October, the setup should be ready to go.
Yeah, it should be around there. So it'll look better.
Looking forward
to it. Just be overall going to open so many more opportunities for us, I think, with just growing the podcast and you know, taking it even farther.
Bringing interesting people to you guys, you know? We can only tell you so much because we only have the internet to research things. We want some experts who know this stuff, who've like dedicated their life to this stuff because they can give you even deeper of an explanation for things,
and probably bring up things that aren't just in news articles on the internet and on just random websites. Like these guys have dedicated
inside
some of their lives to this, which, you know, David's heavily involved. His whole purpose of doing this and really looking into this phenomenon, really, of the number of people that go just vanish out of thin air. These are the cases that he investigates, are basically people that have gone missing, and essentially they rule out that they're animal related.
Yeah.
And there's really no rhyme or reason for why they vanished and how they vanished and what happened to them. So that's really what he focuses on. And it's pretty mind-blowing, honestly, what he's uncovers. But today's Patreon question comes from Nicole. One of my questions, why do you think many people are hesitant to even consider a truth that is not mainstream? For example, why do you think some people discount all conspiracy theories?
Mainly, I think it's because people are afraid to admit it. Because once you admit one thing, that kind of opens the door for another thing. And I think a lot of people like can't even go there.
No, you're absolutely right. You know, if you said it perfectly, if you open one door, then it leads to another. And then there's a hallway down to the left to another door, which then takes you down the rabbit hole. And then, you know, swirl around for a while. And then you end up in a totally different place and a mindset that you never thought was possible to achieve. So Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think fear is a big part of it. People are also just scared of the unknown, scared of what they don't know. And for some people, they just don't want to know necessarily the truth, even if it is, in fact, a difficult truth to swallow. Some people just don't want to know that. So,
or they like have so much faith and like pride in their government that they can't admit that something could be that flawed with it, or they would plan things against us or set things up, rigged systems against us. And I mean, it's not that hard to see these conspiracies, though. Like most people, I mean, the prison system is a perfect explanation. It's pretty much a giant conspiracy.
Yeah.
Against humanity. And it's like a true. To enslave us, yeah. It's not like, do you believe it? It's fucking true. So I don't know. I think that's going to open more. Seeing the truth about a lot of things. You know, I was thinking about it, like on Netflix, they have so many documentaries just about the truth about like climate and food industry and
pharmaceuticals
and the truth about Federal Reserve
corporations
and, corporation stuff where these documentaries can back it up with fact. And this is opening people up to the idea of, okay, there's some fuckery going on, so they're more open to the idea that there could be more fuckery going on. So I think overall societies with things like Netflix and the internet, we're learning a lot more, you know.
Absolutely. And I think people's thought processes are just different. And I think it just takes different people different amounts of time to really open themselves up to things. Because if you slam somebody with something really heavy, or you try to push a you know, or, you know, you just tell somebody about a theory that is very controversial or something that implies some very like evil shit, of course, they're going to adversely react to that. Most likely a logical person is. Like, we have some friends that are, you know, they're very logical people. They base things on fact and evidence and, you know, very scientific about things.
They don't
leave
any room for questioning.
Right. Truth. And that's what they know to be true. And, you know, I respect that because, it's the reality of things. But, you know, I think you also have to always just consider everything as an option. You know, you can't, we can't, you know, for everything that we can't rule out 100%, why can't we at least consider it?
Right.
And question it and think about it critically. So that's just my two cents on it.
Yeah, I totally agree. But I think mainly it's because people are scared.
Yeah, people are scared.
It's a lot easier to just continue living, like, you know.
Vinny, this is halfway true, then we're in trouble.
I think it's more than halfway true, dude. Yeah. There's a lot of evidence for this shit we talk about.
Yeah, and speaking of evidence, they uncovered a massive pyramid in Lost City in China, which is big news that broke this week. And one thing I just wanted to mention, just like the way that we're structuring our podcast, for those that are new to the podcast that don't necessarily understand our flow of things and, you know, maybe have come from other podcasts where they do it a certain way.
Yeah.
Like our whole way here is to be just like a casual chat. And the way that we've kind of been structuring it is like every week, it seems like there's some type of news story. There's some type of discovery. There's something really interesting that maybe graces the headlines, but, you know, nobody's really talking about that much. So I like to go out and find those things. So does Kendall.
And we love can't to really, discuss them. You know, do a whole podcast on them. So we have them as subtopics. And for those of you who like don't want to hear the subtopics and you want to hear, you just want to get right into the meat of the thing, we have.
I put timestamps.
Timestamps now in the description box. So, yeah.
Convenient.
That was a good little explanation there. Okay. So this is craziness.
Yeah. So what you guys are seeing is a 4,300-year-old city. And if you're listening, it looks like a mound, like a mountain. And it doesn't look like much from the outside, but they've started excavating this mountain and they've been uncovering layers and layers of different rock formations and what looks like a pyramid, a step pyramid is what they're called. It's
interesting.
230 feet high and spans 59 acres at its base. An archaeologist just reported this in the August issue of the Journal of Antiquity. The pyramid was decorated with eye symbols and anthropomorphic or part human, part animal faces.
Interesting.
Those figures may have endowed the step pyramid with special religious power and further strengthened the general visual impression on its large audience.
I think it had religious power, pyramids did.
Yeah, because I mean, right, here's the thing. It seems like we're finding more and more pyramids or uncovering more pyramid-like structures, whether they look like exactly like pyramids or they're these step pyramids. It's very, very interesting that they are showing up all over the world.
Yeah.
North, South America, Europe, Asia,
it makes you think maybe there's something to it. Maybe they had figured something out.
Maybe there is something special about the pyramid shape, and maybe there is a reason. Like for me, I think it go either way, right? I think the pyramids could have been a major, major structure in their religious views or spirituality, you know, at the time that these were built. I think there was something special about them, if you want to use that word. But either that, or it seems to me like they may have been used in order to conduct this type of electromagnetic energy source.
Yeah.
That we...
I brought this up in our podcast about Egypt.
Yeah, you did, actually.
Yeah.
So I think we've talked about this before.
Mm-hmm, we have.
But I don't know. It's very interesting that now we're finding one in China that's this large.
I know. Well, it definitely makes it more, even more profound what these pyramids meant. I mean, they obviously meant something. They're everywhere.
It does.
Multiple cultures. Very interesting that everyone had the eye.
God. Mm-hmm.
It's like they really knew, man.
And the part human, part animal thing really gets me too.
Yeah, because most like ancient stuff had that kind of stuff.
Egypt,
in
there. Mayans. So, I mean, almost all of them, I think,
kind
have
of imagery. Yeah.
Like, what if there was like part human, part animal?
There
humanoids,
could have been, or they were like their gods, or
yeah,
aliens,
or they're
for all
like
you know.
Aliens. Yeah, exactly. So
very interesting.
It really is. I mean, it's making you rethink everything about archaeology, and like here's the thing is like the official archaeologists working on the excavation are saying it was like just built for defense, and it has these sophisticated bulwarks, which are defensive walls.
How are they so quick to come out and be like, oh yeah, no, this
it
is
was
from
like
this,
military.
This is this. Like, how the fuck do you know, dude? This is up to interpretation. Unless it says on the outside of it what exactly it does or what it's for, you don't know. And it makes me so annoyed that they put out a narrative as if it's what is fact.
Right. Well, they kind of expect people to take it that way. Take it as like, here's what the experts think it is, so we're just going to adopt that, you know, theory of it. Yeah. But what's interesting about this pyramid, which is called Shimao, I think is how you say it, Shimao. Shimao, probably Shimao. And they actually found remains of numerous human sacrifices.
Ooh.
In the outer gateway of the Eastern Gate on the outer rampart alone, 6 pits containing human heads have been found.
Dude, I wonder. So the Mayans, I know, used to do this crazy like sacrifice where they would take someone up to the top of their pyramids, cut out their heart while they're alive, and then roll them down the entire steps all the way down to the bottom. I wonder if that's what they were doing. If they're finding them at the outside rim
human
of it.
Human sacrifices. Ooh.
Yeah, that's some creepy shit.
God, it's just crazy. Like, so many thoughts are running through my head right now. I'm just like, I just had a thought hit me. Like, human sacrifice seems to be a very big proponent in these ancient civilizations. And
yeah,
if we ever decide to take them seriously and take their beliefs seriously and like what they did, what if, you know, as a part, like if their, let's just say their religions were kind of on the right track to what, you know, the reality is of everything and them understanding what this is, what the universe is and everything based upon their religious, you know, beliefs, because they had a lot of them had similar religious beliefs and human sacrifice being a part of it. But what if that is something that is supposed to be around today? And I'm not implying that there should be, but I'm just saying, like, what if from the angle of why did all these ancient civilizations do it?
Yeah.
Why'd we stop though? If that
How
was
do we
in
know
fact
that
something
we stopped.
There you go. That's what I was waiting for you to say. Exactly. So there's the thought there. But God.
Yeah.
That's just crazy, man.
It is.
But they're saying that it's far older than the Great Wall, which was built 2,700 to 400 years ago. Mm-hmm. Between 27. Oh, okay. So, yeah. An old pyramid in China. Interesting. They're finding artifacts and everything else. So we'll see what happens with that. But something else in the news this week that was interesting and kind of people are buzzing about.
Yeah, well, because it's coming to be that time here. We're going into November-ish area.
Right. Elections are coming.
Yeah, it's right around the corner. Elections, midterm. For those who aren't in America, midterm elections we have every 2 years for House and Senate.
Yeah, and speaking of the House... Latina Rodriguez Aguilera is a Republican vying to replace retiring Representative Ileana Ros Linton in Florida's 27th congressional district. She has once claimed that she was abducted by aliens as a child.
Interesting.
Several years before she announced her candidacy, she appeared on the Spanish language television programs, most recently in 2011, and detailed her experience with aliens. Wow. In one video that was uploaded to YouTube, Rodriguez Aguilera revealed she first encountered aliens when she was 7 years old after her parents asked her to go outside their home. She said she was taken aboard a round spaceship with three extraterrestrial creatures. Wow. Two women and a man were tall, full-figured, and blonde. They wore robes and spoke telepathically. She boarded the spacecraft, she said, where she claims the aliens told her, "God is a universal energy, not a person. It's in everything. God talks to people, and they understand it in different ways, but there's only one religion."
Yep.
And in another interview, the one-time council member from Doral, Florida, said the beings with their arms stretched open reminded her of Rio de Janeiro's Christ the Redeemer statue.
Interesting.
And that she saw them again throughout her teenage years. She also revealed she saw a UFO when she was 17. So this is somebody running for
that's
a congressional
crazy.
Seat.
Do you think she could get elected seat. Or are people just going to be like, she's a whack
well,
job?
Well, she is not the front runner.
Hmm.
But
interesting.
She did get endorsed by the Miami Herald, which is a big newspaper. So it's kind of a big deal.
It's just so hard with these types of things because they don't necessarily have any proof. You have to like decide if you believe them. I've always had trouble with it. But like at the same time, why just completely not believe her? You know, I'm kind of like somewhere in the middle.
Right. And for me, it comes back to other people's, you know, testimonies of experiences they've claimed to have with extraterrestrial beings. And I can say that the extraterrestrial she's referring to, full figured and blonde, remind me a lot of the Pleiadians maybe, or the Nordic race that's out there. But
how do you know it's out there? That could be out there.
That I believe is out there. Sorry. It's not out there for sure.
But you've never seen proof of it.
Just based upon a number of people that have interfaced with these aliens, I think that they might be, this race of aliens might be out there.
Yeah, I think, yeah. From what I've read about that specific one, yeah, there's probably a good chance. Because they're supposed to look pretty much like us, right?
Some of them are, yes, correct.
Interesting.
And it's interesting that they brought up the like religious views of God as a universal energy, mm-hmm. not a person. It's an everything. So that would indicate that these aliens were very, very woke and
very woke.
High up on the consciousness level meter. Because, yeah, that's a pretty interesting and fundamental understanding of everything. And
I'd like to hear her talk about it. It's very hard for me to decide if someone is, if I feel like they're authentic or not just by reading text. I need to like watch a video of her talking about it or something.
Yeah, yeah. Well, she talks about it in Spanish, I believe.
Because Dr. Greer talks about having an experience when he was a child, and I just really believe him. I get such authentic vibes from him.
Yeah.
And I really question a lot of people, so.
So but very interesting,
very
though.
Very interesting.
And the fact that she's so like forthcoming and public about it, because you would think like she would know that some people would just call her a kook and be like, "You're crazy, you crazy woman. Like you don't, you've never seen aliens before."
Yeah.
But she sticks by her story. So
mm-hmm.
I just thought that was interesting that more and more people are seemingly coming forward with these types of experiences to report.
Mm-hmm.
But one other thing sort of related to politics that we just wanted to mention before we get into it is John McCain.
Yeah. The passing of John McCain. John McCain, if you didn't know, is a senator from Arizona who was in the military for a very long time, actually was held as a prisoner of war for a few years with his hands literally tied behind his back, and he had permanent damage from that. And he was suffering from a very rare type of brain cancer. I think it's called glioblastoma, but I'm not completely sure. I've heard
like
Meghan McCain talk about it a bunch of times, so I kind of remember, but I'm not sure. He passed away yesterday, and I was just really sad about it, just because I really like Meghan McCain. I think he was one of the last good political people. And
I mean,
depending on what you think, like, I just had a respect for him.
Right. I mean, you may not always, you know, go along with his politics or views of thinking, but when you look at him as a human being,
right.
when you look at his life experiences, what he's gone through, what he sacrificed,
yeah,
it's astounding. And it's, you know, he is a true patriot, true American hero. He's done more for this country than probably any of us could even ever come close to in our lives. So, you know, you got to pay your respects and, yeah, you know.
And I'm sure he's not perfect. I'm sure there's conspiracies, but, you know, I just, when someone, it's just very sad, especially someone who.
Well, you know, he has a family, yeah, you know, like Megan and, you know, yeah, so it's like, you gotta feel for people.
I really it's like Megan McCain because she's always been able to explain just things I didn't understand, like helped me understand Trump better. And I really respect her. I think she's very smart. And I think that's because her dad raised her. I don't know. I just really felt, I don't know. It's just sad. Cancer sucks.
Yeah, it does.
Just it, does.
It's really, really sucks.
It's rough.
But so, yeah, we just wanted to pay our respects and, you know, positive vibes to the McCain family and anybody that knew him personally. So let's jump into David Politis and the Missing 411 Project.
Yes.
This is really interesting because just to preface this a little bit, like for me personally, I grew up, like the only vacations I ever took were camping trips. And I spent a lot of time in Rocky Mountain National Park, specifically other national parks that are out there. My parents are huge hikers. They're really outdoorsy. They're into, you know, yeah, they're into anything outdoorsy related, but they definitely do tons of hiking. So growing up, instead of going on vacations to, you know, a lot of the, you know, popular vacation spots that families go to, my parents would be like, all right, we're going to spend a week out in the middle of nowhere. And sometimes we'd literally camp in places where there was no designated camping spots. Like we were just in the middle just of the the national forest or something. And just like nobody around us. And thank God, I didn't know what I know now about that. And I was like, whatever, like I'm just in the middle of the forest.
Cause every time we're like, oh, we should go camping. Then we're like, we look at each other like, wait, we know too much. Like, I don't know.
In a tent.
A little just, scary.
It's not really secure.
But it shouldn't be. I mean, I love camping, but
no, I do too. Now we normally try to stay in cabins. The mountains. Yeah, we try to do it in a more secure way now. Let's just say that. But this is very, very interesting. This 401 project, and so is David Politis, which again we want to have on the podcast because he is in our city. So David Politis, he obtained his undergraduate and graduate degrees from the University of San Francisco. And then in 1977, he began working for the Fremont Police Department. So this guy is extremely reputable, has a history in law enforcement. In 1980, he transferred to the nearby San Jose Police Department and worked in the patrol division of the SWAT team, as well as patrol and street crimes unit. He was also a detective for a while, and he worked in the Vice Intelligence Unit and performed a variety of assignments. And in 2011, he retired after 16.5 years of service with the San Jose Police Department. And, you know, once you retire from the police department, a lot of people, you know, end up going on to do other things. You know, other friends that I've had that have, you know, had parents or whatever that have retired as police officers go on to do something else a lot of the times. And what David decided to do was become a cryptozoologist. So somebody who researches cryptids or creatures that, you know, a lot of people often say don't exist, but seems like there might be some evidence for them, such as Bigfoot or Sasquatch. And David Politis has authored a number of books on the topic of Bigfoot, as well as on the disappearance of people to which he attributes unspecified unknown causes, which we're talking about today, and his 411 project. So he's kind of got these two different projects going on.
Yeah.
So in David's pursuit of the cryptid known as Bigfoot or Sasquatch, he self-published two Bigfoot-related books and created the research group called the North America Bigfoot Search, for which he serves as director. But his obsession shifted from Sasquatch to missing persons when he says a national park ranger told him a troubling story. Over his years of involvement with numerous search and rescue operations at several different national parks, this ranger said he had detected a trend that he couldn't understand. The ranger explained that during the first 7 to 10 days of a disappearance, he would witness massive search and rescue activity and significant press coverage. Following this initial week-long effort, there was almost always an immediate halt to the coverage, a discontinued search for the victims, and no explanation from the search authorities. And this bothered David because he's like, what the hell does this... Like, obviously, if a ranger came to you and told you this, you would be like, obviously...
But is that because they just assume the worst?
Maybe.
You know?
Maybe.
And then there's a lot of animals and stuff.
Right, but when you look at the statistics for animals, it doesn't make sense for the number of people that go that go missing and never are found again.
So that's sketch.
Or the remains are found. It is a bit sketch. So this bothered him enough to where David started asking questions and he started getting no answers. So he started doing his own research. And what he discovered has shocked him. People of all ages have been disappearing from national parks and forests at an alarming rate, all under similar circumstances. As of right now, or this past year, I think it's probably far more than this now, but there are up to 1,600 cases and growing where people... children vanish into the wild without a trace and no signs of an animal attack present where they were last seen or where the remains are found. So basically he gets bombarded with cases, I'm sure. But one of the first things he does is he vets out whether or not, you know, if this is just an animal attack, because usually when there's an animal attack, an animal, this is actually kind of crazy, but I had, you remember my friend, Bo?
Yeah.
His mom got attacked by a black bear.
Oh, you've told me.
Remember
this.
How crazy that? Yeah, they live up in the mountains.
Right,
and
fuck.
She was hiking. Like, they live in the mountains, like, way up there. And she was hiking one day, and she literally got chased down by a black bear. And the black bear, like, pawed her, like, a huge paw on her butt. Yeah. Like,
oh my
bam.
God.
And there was, like, she had pictures of it and everything. And, like, she got away from it, but... people do get attacked by them, and I think somebody died from a grizzly the other day. So people do get attacked, get seriously hurt.
Did you see that there was a bear in the Stanley Hotel last night?
No.
Yeah.
Really?
There was a black bear in the lobby, like somehow got into the Stanley Hotel in Estes Park.
Yeah, bears, if you've never seen a bear in the wild, they're very smart, and they know how to open shit really well.
Yeah, they are really smart.
And if you've never been to the mountains, there's these bear-proof trash cans that they're super strict about, where they only have an opening on the top because these bears will figure out how to flip it over or open it up. So that's interesting. And that's one thing I think you have to really consider, and I want to talk to him more about, because I wonder if, you know, with animals seemingly coming down in elevation closer to humans, like there's going to be more attacks and more... you know, animals around. So are they to attribute for some of these disappearances? But not in every case. What's also interesting that David found was that in many of the cases he researched and investigated, parents and relatives of the victims believe their loved ones were kidnapped. And we'll talk about one particular one, or maybe even two today, that, or maybe all of them actually, where kidnapping could be a possibility. Law enforcement and the media typically do not publicize concerns of kidnapping or abduction when the missing can be explained through traditional means. That's true. They do. They oftentimes, you know, especially like if somebody in the wild, they'll immediately go to animal attack, which, you know, logically that makes sense.
Yeah.
But there are too many similar cases to ignore the trend. The consistencies must be accounted for. Victims' families are left without closure, and the Park Service refuses to follow up or keep any sort of national list and or database of the missing people. Thousands of missing people. And this documentary that he put out called Missing 411, the movie, I'll link it for you guys so you guys can go see it. It's on Hulu for free if you've got a Hulu account, or it's on Amazon and Vimeo. But in his documentary, he sits down with Ken Salazar, who is during the Obama era was the head of the Department of the Interior, I believe. And he asked him, like, point blank, he's like, is there any list that exists to account for all the missing persons in national parks and lands? And he literally, of course, like, chokes on his saliva and is like, and then makes this, like, bullshit excuse, basically like, no, that would be way too hard, essentially. We don't have a way to do this.
Yeah, didn't they say that it would cost $1.6 million to get that information?
Yeah, I think that's what David said it was. Yeah, it was like 1.4, 1.6 million.
They gave him some crazy amount.
to do that.
This makes no sense.
So they have no database. We have no idea exactly how many people have gone missing. And there's a lot of national parks.
Yeah. And there's a lot of people that have gone missing in them.
Yes, there's a lot. So David's instincts told him that this was a story that needed to be told. So in 2011, he launched the Can-Am Missing Project and then devoted 6 years to investigating missing people in rural areas. And the result of this was the identification of 52 geographical clusters of missing people in North America. These clusters form the basis for his self-published 6 volumes in his popular Missing 411 book series, with his most recent book being Missing 411 Hunters, Unexplained Disappearances. So he also put out the documentary we just mentioned in 2016. And his whole hope with this, and from what I've gathered, is that he just wants to bring awareness to the amount of people that are going missing in national parks and like have people start thinking about this a little bit deeper.
I really appreciated that about him is that his documentary didn't push any narrative. He didn't say, I think it's Bigfoot, because like, I don't know if I think it's Bigfoot. I think it may be something else. So he really leaves it open for the viewer to kind of make up their own mind and definitely doesn't push any narrative in that.
No, not at all.
Which is nice.
Which is great. And I think the best way to do it. So
I agree.
I just wanted to give you guys a little listen of his teaser trailer here because it's so fascinating. Hang on one sec. Sorry. Yeah. So I really hope we can get him on the podcast soon because I'd love to talk to him about this fairly soon after we do this episode because I think he could provide a lot of insight on what we talk about today, as well as maybe new stuff that's come up. So here's here's the intro to his documentary.
According to state police, there are 41 missing children.
At least they have an idea of where he was last seen.
Follows them for a point, but then turns around and goes back.
There's no clothing, there's no blood, there's nothing there.
Makes any sense to this case whatsoever. It's something.
I called every name I could.
And I listened.
I wanted the media to be on my son. Not on me.
Why are they acting this way? Are they concealing something?
Doesn't matter who thinks you're a murderer, we need to find your son.
And here was this little toddler with absolutely no clothes on at all.
Across my desk, that's an exact match for what we've talked about.
We're talking about a worldwide collective of information.
Everybody wants an answer. Hopefully someday we'll come up with one.
There's just too many questions that don't have answers.
So that's, well, if that doesn't grab you, then just wait till the end of this episode because it's really interesting. It gives you a very good visual representation of the stories we're going to be covering because we're going to cover some of the stories that are in his documentary, but I'd highly recommend you go watch it after this because it is very interesting. And one of the things that's mentioned in there is that a lot of the kids or children that go missing, there's a strange trend among them that many of them have some type of physical or mental disability, it seems, which, you know, I don't know exactly what, you know, how to, what that exactly means or if there is more significance to that, but it is very interesting that of the children that go missing in national parks, a number of them, a large number of them have some type of physical or mental disability.
So interesting.
And then the one rescuer that's in the film mentions a time where the like one of the weirdest things that happened to her while out searching for somebody. She was just searching through the woods and all of a sudden a child, a young child like comes out of seemingly nowhere and has no clothes on.
Yeah, that's
and
so creepy.
She's like, "What? Like what is going on? Like that's weird." And I think you're starting to hopefully kind of see some of the trend here and in, you know, some of the things we might insinuate about that. I mean, that's just so wild. But let's talk about story number one, and that's about Jared Atadero. And he is a 3-year-old who disappeared while hiking alone on a steep trail through the dense woods of Roosevelt National Forest in Colorado in October 1999. And a lot of these take place in Colorado.
Yeah, they do.
So, Jared's father, Alan, who owned the lodge that they were staying at, let Jared go for a short hike with some adults and his 6-year-old daughter. And one thing to mention about this is he was at like a, there was like a church group there, like a Christian church group there. And those, he went with them. because they were staying at the lodge that he owns. At some point, Jared became separated from the adults and his sister. He eventually ran into a group of fishermen who talked to him for a little while and then let him head back alone.
And this was really weird the way they explained it. They basically said that they were kind of like walking in a single file line along the trail.
And they were hiking along.
They sort of like got spaced out and then somehow they lost track of him.
They stopped for a period of like
20
minutes and then...
He's three.
Nobody was watching him.
He's fucking three.
And just let him like run off.
I know something really was like really off about that to me.
So he runs off and then he runs. There's like a roaring creek or river pretty much where fishermen are fishing. And the fishermen remember this kid coming up to them and they're like, who are you with?
Yeah.
And then they send him back. They should have like walked him back to his parents and just be like, run back, little child. Like,
yeah, run back into the woods.
Like, oh yeah, God.
Some people seems so have dumb. No like instinct for this kind of stuff. I swear to God.
But after Jared leaves the fisherman, he's never seen again. We have no idea where he went, where he disappeared to. He's just gone. So search and rescue is immediately called. With the trail clearly marked and many people on it that day, Jared's father and the adults who were in charge of his safety expected him to be found in a matter of hours, which how far could he possibly go, you know, in that amount of time? I mean, it wasn't like days or hours and hours and hours that he was missing.
Right.
It wasn't that long. Mm-mm. But he ends up being missing for a long time because it wasn't until 2003. So from 1999 to 2003 is when a pair of hikers found his clothing, and shortly thereafter, teeth and skull fragments or skull cap were discovered and later matched to Jared by DNA. And what's so puzzling and weird about this is that his remains were found off a part of the trail marked strenuous.
Strenuous, so like harder?
Up, it was 500 feet up a like boulder field.
Oh, right, yeah.
Which, if you don't know what a boulder field, this is very, very tough terrain to hike up. These are huge boulders. You're having to look like a couple steps ahead of you. And for a child to get up that high,
that'd be difficult.
Is crazy. Yeah. It's like insane. Doesn't even seem possible. Mm-mm. Remember the pair of hikers were like, we're avid hikers and that was tough for us. So there's no way a little kid like wandered his way up there.
No. Doesn't make any sense.
That's interesting. And what's also interesting is that the search and rescue teams involved claim to have gone over the area where they found his remains prior to actually finding them. That was another interesting thing about it was they were like, yeah, we swear we went up that side. Like, how did we not see this if it was there the whole time? Like,
yeah,
that's what's so weird about it, too, is like
kind of just like appeared later on.
Yeah. And it's just so bizarre. Let me explain this. So. Many speculated that Jared had been attacked and carried off by a mountain lion. The findings seemed to fit the narrative until they found his clothing or had his clothing examined. And this was perhaps the most weird thing about all of this is that they actually showed it. His fleece jacket is not like ripped up like you would expect because a mountain lion takes you and eats you. If that's what you're going to say happens to you, then... It's not going to like preserve your clothes first. It's going to just tear right through it and,
you know, rip them off.
Right. That's what you would think. I mean, maybe not, but it wasn't ripped. It was like folded and the pants were intact.
Yeah.
But inside out.
Yeah. That was weird to me too.
And the pants are actually torn and like ripped apart, but it's clearly from birds like picking off the fabric to use as,
later
like,
on. Yeah. Right. Right.
But then what was also really weird is the shoes were like in great condition.
Yeah, they were like perfect. They were just sitting there. People who found it were like, it just looked like it was sitting there, like it was supposed to be there, or a kid just stepped out of it.
Yeah, that's exactly what they said. That's so fucking crazy. Yeah,
that's really weird.
And the dad is literally like showing the shoes and he's like, if he was dragged off by a mountain lion, you would expect to see, you know, some type of dragging or some type of...
Yeah. Evidence
marks
of that.
On the actual shoes. And not only that, but the Colorado Bureau of Investigation ran DNA tests on his clothes and found no hair from a predatory animal and
see, that's weird.
No blood.
It's not like an animal's trying not to leave behind evidence either. So that's just so weird.
The fact that there's no blood on the clothes, they're not, the shirt's not ripped at all, and there's no mountain lion hair. There, you would, I would expect that. You would see at least something, tissue, anything.
That's so weird.
But there's no blood either.
What on earth?
Because, I mean, if a mountain lion were to, like, attack me, there'd be blood on my shirt, 100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Somewhere, or a hair, or something.
They go, they're smart. They don't, they go where they can, like.
Yeah.
They're predators. They know where to go. They go for that shoulder, neck area. They go for that. They would know to attack there.
I was wondering, though, like, if you were to get, like, bit in the neck by a mountain lion, what if they, like, didn't take their teeth out of the puncture wounds and that kept the blood in? Could that happen? Or is that just, like, not? Like, would some blood still have come out?
There would have been blood. 100%. Well, think about it. If you were to take a pin, stick it in your finger, blood would immediately come out. It wouldn't plug the hole, you know? Blood would come out.
Right. Especially that big.
And a mountain lion's going to readjust its grip. It's funny you said that. I literally just watched a YouTube video about a woman that the video is literally called I Survived a Mountain Lion Attack. And I watched this before watching this. And she accounts, she's a full-grown woman. She was hiking and a mountain lion literally just jumped out of nowhere, grabbed her by the back of her neck and literally like attacked half of her face.
Oh my God.
And she survived though, which is crazy. She thought she was dead for sure. Survived it. And now is talking about it. It's like crazy.
And there was probably blood everywhere for her.
There was. That was the thing. There was so much blood everywhere.
You would find
it was crazy.
Something.
Right?
That's so weird. So that's when people start getting into zones of like conspiracy, aliens, something paranormal, something like that.
Yes.
That's what gets really interesting.
Which we'll talk about in a second. But here's some also interesting facts about this particular case. So a group called the Thunder Street Ministry, who has worked with the Atadero family specifically, help them to solve cold cases, provide investigative services at no cost, kind of like a for free charity type group. But they made a visit to the Poudre Canyon from September 21st and 24th and spent some time with Atadero family on the Big South Trail, which was where Jared was last seen. And they had some thoughts. I found this on a Reddit forum because they had some thoughts about this. Because there's been a ton of craziness surrounding this, and some of it coming straight from his dad, which I'll talk about. But they wanted to make a few statements about this case. They said, the group that Jared was with was comprised of individuals known to Alan and whom he hosted at the resort in the past, save for three new people in the group. The woman who was initially looking after Jared and his sister was a family friend who had babysat the kids on several occasions and had given the family a place to stay when they first moved to Colorado. That's interesting. So they did have somebody that was like a babysitter for Jared and his sister that was on the hike with Jared that day.
That's weird.
Yeah, isn't it?
Yeah.
So initially, when Alan refused to let Jared go on the hike, he was told they were only going to the Poudre River Fish Hatchery, which is less than 10 minutes from the resort.
It's like trout, right?
Mm-hmm. He was familiar with that area and eventually let Jared go along. The team made a stop here on the second day of the trip and found it to be an ideal place for families to take their kids. The group then left without telling Alan where they had gone. Jared's parents, here's another interesting thing. Jared's parents divorced a year or two before moving to Colorado, so she was not in the picture until after Jared disappeared.
Hmm.
Which is why in the documentary, you only see his dad.
Yeah, I was wondering about that, actually.
The condition of Jared's clothing indicates that someone placed them there to be found. As someone mentioned earlier in the forum, the clothes would have been covered with debris if they were even strong enough to have lasted four winters in the canyon. That's what's so crazy, guys, is that he goes missing in 1993 to 2003. And when you see his clothes, I'll see if I can put it in here, but if you're seeing his clothes, then you are going to be like, well, especially his fleece pullover, you're like, what the hell?
Yeah.
3-4 years in the forest, like no debris.
Yeah, it looks like it was literally just set there. That is so weird, but like if someone abducted him, why would they come and like bring his clothes back? What the fuck? That is so bizarre, dude.
It is bizarre. Because mountain lions do not skin their prey. Like that's
they don't remove
clothing.
Yeah. What?
So that is very interesting. Also, the remains found are completely inconsistent with a mountain lion attack. Initially, they did not find any remains with the clothing. After a press conference was held and the sheriff made his claim that it was a mountain lion attack, a well-respected medical examiner by the name of Dr. Michael Baden was interviewed. He was very blunt in his analysis that if it were a mountain lion attack, you wouldn't just find nothing. He said you'd find small bones in the shoes, that you'd at least find a tooth. It was after this they sent the forensic team to comb the area and found a tooth sitting on top of a log with no debris covering it. The tooth was also determined to be from the lower jaw, which was not found in the area. So what the fuck is that about? Like, how does that happen? How does one tooth just show up on a log with nothing else?
How would they have not missed that? Or like, how would it, wouldn't it be, wow, that's so weird.
That's creepy as hell.
It disappeared. It's almost like someone's setting it out.
It seems like it's like a, yeah.
Wow, that's so creepy.
Very creepy. The sheriff who's in charge of the actual search was present only when news cameras were present. When they left, he left. He was also the architect of the mountain lion theory, which he claimed was what the press wanted to hear. Behind the scenes, he told Allen that he believed Jared fell in the river, which that was kind of my thought too, was that it'd be very easy for a child to fall in a river and...
But wouldn't they find him? Like,
but that's the thing. It doesn't...
Something?
Right. The clothes, like, yeah, disprove that.
Yeah, right. The clothes disprove that. Couldn't they like test them for water, like river water? Did they do that? I guess you probably don't know. I wonder if they did that.
Can you test for river water?
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, I'm sure you can tell if something's been in the river and is dried. I don't know. Actually, I mean, I really can't speak. I'd imagine they'd be able to do that.
But where's his body then? And how did it get up on the side of this mountain? How would his clothes go being in the river to up the mountain?
See, I don't know. This whole thing is just so weird. I don't know at all. I have no solid theories.
It's completely crazy.
It seems like every theory I come up with, it's like debunked. It's like there's nothing. It doesn't make sense. Something makes it untrue.
It's very weird. And here's another weird thing that wasn't in the documentary, was that there was a supposed sighting of Jared at Mesa Verde National Park, but it's never been followed up on. And it completely puts a major kink into the mountain lion drowning theories. And if you're not familiar with this theory, a seasonal ranger at Mesa Verde was leading a morning tour group when a little boy kept coming up to him trying to hold his hand. The ranger said the man he was with kept calling the boy something that sounded like Gerald. That night, as he watched the news with his wife, Jared's picture came up and he immediately recognized him as the boy he saw in the group.
What?
Dude, I just got chills reading that, like down my back of my neck. I was like, it seems like, and this is what Jared's dad believes, is that his son was kidnapped and... That's crazy. I mean, this guy...
I'm confused.
So Mesa Verde is like on the other side of where he went missing. So it's possible that he could have either wandered there or he got taken there to the other side. But why would somebody take an abducted child back into the national park on a tour? But it's weird that this kid kept coming up to him and he looked a lot like Jared when he saw him later that night.
I am so confused now. What? This stuff
it's never
so
been
weird.
Followed up on, apparently. Nobody's ever followed up on the sighting of Jared in the Mesa Verde National Park. But it completely just earth. Like kills the other theories of mountain lion drowning.
Unless it's not him, but like, why?
So basically there could be some crazy sicko out there that abducted him, has him, and is like literally playing with everybody.
It could be. Like, I was thinking, like, what if there's people that, like, live in these national parks in, like, caves or something, and they take people?
Well, we already know. I mean, what's...
Does that make... Is yeah. that crazy to say?
No, it's not. It's absolutely not crazy. I mean, look at... In Colorado alone, I think there's been a lot of different busts of different types of, you know, child rings and things like that that have been busted in rural Colorado places. It's freaky to think about. But this is true. They have.
Mm-hmm. Johnny Gosch was kept in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
Most of his.
That's what I'm saying. Is like, we don't know who's living off the grid in these parks.
No.
And neither do the parks, probably.
The world's a big place.
They're huge parks.
Yeah.
Huge.
I would not be surprised. Yeah. That's so creepy.
We don't
though.
Know what's all in the parks.
Why would you bring him back to the park? If someone really took him, why would they bring him back? That's so weird.
It's very weird. And the reason why I believe this even more is because Jared's dad himself does not believe the mountain lion theory, because he believes someone removed Jared's clothing before he was attacked.
Wow. Which is says why that he's not paid to do any speaking engagements or podcasts. It's rare anyone wants to talk to him about it. Why don't people want to talk to him about it? To Alan.
They have, though. I have some information that he talked about in a podcast interview, actually.
Well, it says it's rare that people want to talk to him.
Yeah, which is...
He could come on our podcast.
Well, here's... I'll tell you why. Because people think he's, like, crazy. Because listen to his conspiracy theory.
Okay.
Because there is no official conclusion from law enforcement on Jared's case. It's still open. But basically, Alan, Jared's dad, believes that Jared was abducted by a park ranger and taken to Mesa Verde National Park on the other side of Colorado, killed, and then returned to the Roosevelt National Forest, and that the DNA test was fabricated by police and that no teeth have really been found, and that Jared's clothing was inside out when he arrived at the scene, suggesting molestation, but refolded back to normal when official photos were taken. That Jared was abducted by occultists or government pedo rings that a man from the local police called him, saying the police were keeping secrets from him about what really happened. The book calls police officers investigators charlatans and calls Alan a follower of Christ who must stand up for their evil obstruction of justice.
Interesting.
So I'm not going to say this. I don't know 100% if he said this or not, but this did come from an interview.
So that kind of seems like he thinks.
Yeah, but he definitely does think that there is some type of abduction by somebody that killed him, or, you know, may have used him for, he could have been a sex offender or something like that, basically. Mm-hmm.
And those types of rings do exist with
absolutely
government involved in it. They do.
Yeah. And there is proof of it,
mm-hmm,
which is crazy.
I mean, that would make sense, especially the fact that his pants were found inside out.
It doesn't make sense. Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. Uh-huh. But that's the whole thing. And that's right. That's the whole thing with all of these, is that there's a lot of possibilities. There's infinite possibilities, seemingly. There's infinite theories that could be drawn about it. But at the end of the day, we just don't know. We just don't know exactly what happened. Mm-mm. And that's the case for Bobby Bizzup.
Oh, yeah. This is weird.
This is very weird.
This is also in Colorado, right?
Mm-hmm. Near Estes Park, near the Stanley Hotel. If you've never heard of that, it's a haunted hotel.
Yeah, I did a video on it.
Yeah, we got to go back there. I love that place.
I know we do. It's beautiful.
Paranormal hub there.
Yeah, it is.
No, seriously, though. We had a paranormal experience there.
Yeah, we did. There's a video about it.
There is. All right. So Bobby Bizzup. So on August 15th, 1958, Bobby Bizzup, age 10, was fishing down by Cabin Creek while attending summer camp at St. Malo Retreat near Estes Park, Colorado, which is a camp organized by the Catholic Church. At approximately 6 p.m., a camp counselor approached Bobby and informed him it was time for dinner. The two of them walked down the hill back toward the camp. The counselor, noting Bobby was just behind him, yet when he reached the camp and turned back again, Bobby was gone. He vanished.
How does he even know he was following him if he just didn't talk to him the whole way back? That's so weird. That sounds sketch.
I don't understand, man. I don't understand, like, how people buy that. Like,
I know.
You're the counselor of this camp. He's 10 years old. You think you wouldn't just, like, walk in front of him and not, like, make sure he was with you.
I know. That's,
I guess there's irresponsible parents and adults out there that just don't look after the young.
You'd think he'd, like, hear him, or if something happened to him behind him, you would hear it.
That's what's weird about it, too. So he must have felt.
Like, wouldn't he have screamed if something grabbed him or something?
Yeah.
It's not like he walked that much faster than him. If he was walking behind, it's not like he was, you know, running.
Right, which.
That's weird.
Yeah, maybe there's something sketchy with that counselor going on.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
All right, so Bobby Bizzup. Oh, fuck, sorry, I just lost my place.
No, it's the St. Malo Retreat.
Yeah, all right. St. Malo Retreat, also known as Chapel on the Rock, was built in 1936 on land donated by Mr. and Mrs. Oscar Malo. The concept of the chapel was to be built on a rock like the famous Bible verse. I forget what it is. But it's just east of Rocky Mountain National Park, which is literally right on the edge of Rocky Mountain National Park. So at that time, the facility was used as a boys' camp led by priests and seminarians. Bobby Bissup, the only son of Master Sergeant Joseph Bissup, attended that camp. Bobby was mostly deaf and didn't speak clearly, so he mostly kept to himself, but he loved fishing. So after the search for Bobby begins, it extended across 4 days with an estimated 300 people searching over 16 square miles. So that's a huge operation, which in every case, this does not happen. In a lot of cases, there isn't this many resources to be looking for somebody. But in back in 1958, they had a lot more, it seems. But the search included airmen from Denver's Lowry Air Force Base, where Bobby's father was stationed. Bloodhounds searched the woods, and skin divers searched the heavier ponds. The search extended up Mount Meeker to approximately 11,000 feet and 4 miles in each direction. There was no sign of him, only his bait box about a mile from the creek where he was last seen by his counselor. The camp director made a statement claiming he was sure Bobby was just hiding. A vacationing physician claimed to have seen Bobby walking the streets in Estes Park, 15 miles north of St. Malo's. That's what's so interesting, and they left out in the documentary is that there was claims of seeing him walking in Estes Park, like in the streets, in the town.
What? How would he have gotten to back there? Just walk down?
I don't know. 15 miles? Somebody drove him there if he was in fact in Estes Park.
That is so weird.
Yeah. Clerks in Estes Park hardware store also reported seeing a young boy resembling Bobby. They even tried asking him questions, but he failed to respond, pointing to his mouth and ears and quickly left when approached. That's really crazy, because if that was in fact him, then he was abducted, clearly.
Yeah.
He didn't walk 15 miles in that time. There's no way.
How could he have gotten abducted with the camp counselor like right in front of him?
That's what's so wild about this.
Uh-huh. Something seems weird.
I want to know more about the camp counselor.
Yeah, me too.
Because that's really weird. That's very sketchy. But it wasn't until almost a year later on June 6, 1959, that he was finally found. Three camp counselors from St. Malo's, including one who helped lead the original search for Bobby, came across part of his hearing aid, scraps of clothing, and some bones, which were all later to be confirmed as being Bobby's.
What?
What's crazy about this is where his remains were found, because they were found in a ravine's heavy underbrush just below Timberline on Mount Meeker, which Timberline is the point on a mountain, very, very high point, where it's so high that trees can't even grow anymore. So 11,000 feet up a 14,000 foot mountain.
So how on earth did he get up that high?
That's the question. How did he get there? And why didn't we find his body there? Or why didn't we find the rest of his remains there? Or why didn't we even find him during the original search? Because they searched that whole area, remember? They went up.
They went that high?
They went in, yeah, they went up that mountain.
They thought he could have gotten up there?
They looked. They thought maybe, back to a mountain lion, because mountain lions would
carry him up.
They would, if they attack you, they're going to pull you up somewhere.
So if that happened and a mountain lion got him, then the camp counselor definitely would have heard the mountain lion attack him.
They're not that stealthy.
And there'd be some blood and signs of a struggle, you know, marks in the dirt, his footprints, something.
He was deaf. He didn't really speak.
Well, you can still scream.
But if you're,
you're being attacked by a mountain lion, it's not you're like, oh, I'm just quiet. Like, no.
No, you're going to be like,
you're going to make noise.
Deaf or not, I think you're going to scream.
And I think if anything, there would be marks on the ground. Did they try to follow footprints or anything?
They did.
They
did track footprints, I believe, and they came back, I want to say. Or maybe, I'm sorry, maybe that was the other one,
Seems like these stories are always so confusing and, don't have enough detail.
Well, that's the thing, is it comes down
very
to, hush, like...
hush about it.
Someone, it comes down to someone recounting a story, basically.
Yeah.
But Bobby was found almost a year later, 3 to 3.5 miles away from the camp, and 2,500 feet up Mount Meeker.
That's crazy.
Which would have been very difficult for a 10-year-old to even just climb up there.
Yeah.
But the fact that people claim to have seen him in Estes Park, 15 miles south of St. Malo, is just mind-boggling. How would he have gotten there?
I don't know. That is
maybe
super
he was
weird.
Hungry and headed toward food, but disappeared.
Why? What? Why would he go up for food? He would go back to the camp or to town.
Yeah. Because even look at the picture. I mean, look
this
how far that is.
Doesn't make any sense.
Look how far the little location of remains compared to where he is. All the way up there.
Wow.
That's crazy.
And he's just a kid.
He's a 10-year-old.
That's bizarre. Something sketchy is going on with that for sure.
Because that's the thing, right? If you get eaten by wildlife, there's going to be a sign. Like, they're not like clean eaters. They're not like picking up all their, you know, cleaning up after them.
Yeah. No.
That's craziness. So,
all right, let's talk about Dior. This case is crazy to me.
Yeah, this was kind of the main case they focused on in the 4-1 movie because it can go a lot of ways. And it's really just a missing child case that is baffling. All right. So the child's name is Dior, and he was last seen in Lemhi County in Idaho on July 10, 2015. He was with his parents, Jessica Mitchell and Vernell de Dior Kuhn Sr., his great-grandfather, Robert Walton, and Walton's friend, Isaac Reinwind. The group was camping at Timber Creek Campground in a remote mountainous area about 10 miles west of Lador, Idaho. And this campground was extremely remote. The road to it was miles long, and it was like rocks, like off-road type road. Like, you got to have an off-road vehicle. So remember that. But at 2:35 p.m., Mitchell called 911 and said her son had disappeared. According to her, she left Dior with Walton, and she and Dior Sr. went to explore the campground. And when they returned about 10 to 15 minutes later, the child was gone.
But that's not exactly that. They were walking with him. He started following them to go see something. There was something like they didn't believe that someone had found fish and they wanted to see where they were finding
the
fish.
Right, yeah.
And so they were all walking and he followed them. And then they were like, are you sure you want to go? It's a long way. And he was like, no, and turned back. And then they didn't see him actually get to the grandpa. So it's not like, and the grandpa wasn't communicated with, like, we're leaving him with you, you know? So who even knows?
Well, that's what's so crazy is the story fluctuates a bit as far as what exactly happened at the time he was last seen. But they looked for him. His parents looked for him for about 20 minutes before calling 911. According to Mitchell, Dior never went anywhere without his blanket, his cup, or his toy monkey, and all these items were left at the campground. So what happened to him? He literally just disappeared.
Somewhere between where they were walking and the campsite.
Because the grandpa basically said he like dozed off. Like he was like, he understood that he was to watch him, but he understood also that he kind of just.
I'm confused though, because they said that they just sent him back. So maybe he didn't, he thought he was with him. He was with them.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, that's the whole thing about it is it doesn't make sense. And as we find out, the story changes.
It gets a little sketchy
because it doesn't really make sense, and it doesn't make sense that his grandfather also had this other guy there that was just his friend, and this guy is a interesting individual for sure. But basically, to this day, police don't exactly know what happened to little Dior, but they quickly sent trained professionals, police dogs, helicopters out to survey the area to see if Dior had fallen into the stream and drowned, or he was attacked and dragged away by animals, but they found no evidence on either front, which there was a little creek there, but it had tons and tons of branches and different things in it that would have, if he had fallen in, they would have found him. Don't you think?
Yes, absolutely. It was very like congested. There's no way you could just float down this thing. It was like tons of logs and rocks, and it wasn't like a clear space with like tons of flowing water. It looked like kind of a creek that just had
something that would like sweep you away.
Yeah, it was a creek. It was not a
creek.
River. Yeah, they kept calling it a creek. Do some people call it that though? Is that like
I think
a
it's kind of like
it?
A yeah.
I don't know. I've heard that
creek.
Before.
Yeah, I've heard it called a creek before too. But of course, in many missing persons, especially missing child cases, first order of business is to look at the parents, obviously. The police have to look at the parents to see and make sure that they're not involved in some way. And that's where inconsistencies begin to arise. The police finally admitted that Jessica and Dior Sr. were suspects in January 2016 as citizens wondered whether or not they should answer the couple's call for donations, which the thing about it is they have been very vocal about their missing son. And in the documentary, they're interviewed pretty extensively about about it and stuff. And for me personally, I don't get, like, they seem like pretty distraught and like upset. Yes,
concerned parents for sure. They didn't seem, they acted how I would expect someone to act. You know, you can't judge someone for how they act, but like you also kind of can because we've seen some weird things in the past. But they were definitely, I don't know, from especially from him, the father, he was very concerned. He was very proactive about, you know, how do we, like, what do we do to find him? And the mother seemed really distraught over it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, maybe they're, obviously they're going to be considered suspects when it doesn't make sense any other way. But that's where David Politis and other people would say, well, it may not make sense based on what we know, but there's things out there we may not know about.
Right.
And that could leave someone being guilty for something that they're not guilty of.
Right.
Because it's something that's yet to be understood or something that's yet to be seen. Aliens, Bigfoot.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't have that much familiarity with like cryptids or whatever it's called. But I mean, who's to say that that stuff isn't real?
But the thing about it is like police have come out and said that, and this is a quote, they said people need to know that the mom and dad are being less than truthful and they can make a decision whether to donate based on that. He said, we've interviewed them multiple times and every time there are changes to parts of their story. The little things all change every time we speak with them.
That's concerning.
We re-interviewed them, but they weren't willing to tell us the truth. And this coming from the sheriff. As for the grandpa and his friend Isaac Reinwand, who were also at the campsite, they were at the scene, so we won't rule them out. But in terms of persons of interest, I think mom and dad are higher on the list. 1 year after the disappearance, more weird evidence came out to suggest that things didn't happen the way the parents suggested they did. According to Idaho News, Jessica and Dior Sr. were evicted from their apartment in Idaho Falls, and inside the abandoned home, investigators found toys and a camo jacket that the parents said baby Dior had with him when he went missing.
Weird.
Yeah. Another weird thing is, and maybe completely unrelated, but Jessica does not have custody of her other two kids from another relationship is something that I saw, which was interesting.
That definitely hurts her credibility for sure.
But what's really just makes me question them is they hired a private investigator to work for them to prove their innocence, actually quit working for them in November 2017. And he told the Idaho News that it is our firm belief that until truthfulness comes from the persons that we, as well as law enforcement, have named as suspects, there's nothing further to investigate. They went on to suggest that the parents get charged at least with child endangerment.
Wow. Interesting. A private investigator said that?
He also said a lot more, but it's, you know, a lot of it is more speculative, I think.
Wow.
But a lot of people believe the parents know at least more about what happened than they're telling. And some people are saying it could have been accidental, an accidental death cover up type situation.
But where would they put his body?
I don't know.
Because it's like they searched their campsite, they searched the trailer, they searched the whole area. Where did they put it? Unless literally everyone was in on it and it happened days before.
Well, that's what people think is that the kid never made it to the campsite.
That's possible too. Like maybe they were at a different campsite first or somewhere else first. That's where it happened. And then they like go out into the middle of the forest and it's like more believable.
Which is a possibility.
Right. But then you'd have to assume that the grandpa's in it. The grandpa's friend is in on it. The dad, the mom. Wasn't there some other person too? There was like one other friend, I thought.
No, it was the grandpa, the friend, and then the mom and dad.
Well, weren't they walking when they were walking and he was following them? I thought there was a third person with them.
It might have been.
It was just the mom and the dad.
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
So it was the friend of the grandpa that was with them.
I believe
Right, and he was fishing. Yeah. I remember now. He was fishing. He said he caught something. They went to go see.
Right.
So he was with them, and he wasn't with the grandpa, or else they would have made note of him being there as well.
Yeah, and remember they went to the friend's, like, trailer that he lives in, and they, like, tried to, like, interview him, and remember how weird he acted when he, like, opened the door and just was like, creep, like barely opens. Like,
I don't think I saw that part. I was,
what?
Oh, no, I did.
Remember?
And I did. Yes.
Hey, do you know, like, can you tell us anything yes. about the disappearance? And yes. he's like, I have nothing to say Such or something weird. He's a really weird dude. You'll see it in the movie, but I don't know. I just get weird vibes from, like, I think there's definitely something more going on than they're telling us. I really do. And I hate making judgments based upon, you know, circumstantial evidence, but that's what you got to go off of sometimes. And at the end of the day, if there is foul play involved, as the sheriff's department says, then, you know, we want justice for little Dior. I mean, he's a cute little guy.
Wasn't there her police call kind of strange too? I don't really remember.
Well, it was weird because they almost weren't able to make a police call because they were so far out there. And I guess she tried a couple times, and then the husband actually got in the truck and like drove down the road to try to see if they could get service, because they said there wasn't even really like cell service, but they happened to get a call through.
Yeah, how did they even do that?
Yeah. It's so weird.
Yeah, they said they tried for a while though.
Yeah.
All right, I have the call. Do you want to hear it real fast?
You have the 911 call?
Yeah.
A phone call no parent ever wants to make.
What's the address of your emergency?
I'm actually camping in Ledworth. Just outside of Ledworth.
Uh-huh.
My two-year-old son. We can't find him.
You can hear Jessica Mitchell's voice trembling.
How long has he been missing?
About an hour. Yeah.
The last place family says they saw Dior Kuntz Jr. was a campground 10 miles west of Ledore after being put on hold.
Jessica?
Yeah.
Okay. What is he wearing?
He was wearing cowboy boots, a blue pair of like pajama pants, and a camel jacket.
The dispatcher asks for a description of the toddler.
How tall is he? Hello?
Yes,
probably just bad service.
I'm not exactly sure how.
She doesn't seem that focused, though.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting.
It's so hard to, like, judge off emotion or any of that, because no one knows how you'd react. But my first thought is, like, whenever I've heard a number of different experts say that if you ever hear before something like that, that it could imply there's some type of deceit there happening.
It's hard to say. I say so much. No one knows how they would act.
No, like, that's true. And I'm not saying that that's right at all, because honestly, I don't know what I would do. I might say because my mind might be such a mess that I can't even formulate what I'm trying to say, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, that case is still open. And still trying to figure out what happened to poor little guy, little Dior. I mean, I hope he's still out there, but God, it's been a while now.
Yeah, probably not.
Hard for a little guy like that to survive in the wild if he is, you know, alone.
Mm-hmm.
But this is, let's get into a few more facts around this. That's just so interesting. So if you didn't know, there's roughly 640 million acres of federal lands, including national parks, national forests, and the Bureau of Land Management property. On a side note, the National Institute of Justice, the research arm of the Department of Justice, calls unidentified remains and missing persons the nation's silent mass disaster, estimating that on any given day, there are between 80,000 and 90,000 people actively listed with law enforcement as missing. Wow. And this is not just national parks, it's just across the board.
Yeah, it's insane.
It's an astounding amount. That's crazy, though.
That's really,
the
that
missing
really
persons
is.
Thing is like a real problem. Like
Very,
totally. What the fuck is going on, man?
I don't know. I think
too many, I feel like it's just too many for.
I think a lot of them are going to the same
random
places.
Oh, God.
I think human trafficking is a huge part of it.
I think it probably is a huge part of it for sure. And what's crazy is that a majority of those in that number disappeared in populated areas. However, a large number go missing in rural places, such as the cases like 51-year-old Dale Steeling, who in 2013 vanished from a short petroglyph viewing trail near the gift shop at Colorado's Mesa Verde National Park, which I've been to that
National Park and probably that gift shop too. And he was not even that far away from the gift shop and he just disappeared without a trace. Morgan Heimer, a 22-year-old rafting guide who was wearing professional-grade personal flotation device when he disappeared in 2015 in the Grand Canyon National Park during a hike. Ohioan Chris Fowler, who vanished from the Pacific Crest Trail in 2017. So that's the thing also I wanted to make clear is that this is not just children going missing too. This is all ages. This is not just a like age-specific problem. It's not at all. Another thing that's interesting too is it seems like if you go missing in the wilderness or in a park, that there may or may not be anyone coming to look for you.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
That is crazy and scary.
It's not like they have all these people on deck just waiting to find missing persons.
Especially because you need so many more people. You need such a more advanced search party to search rough terrain like that.
Yeah.
So it honestly costs a lot of resources. Plus you're thinking like, what are the chances that they're out there? Like how much of our resources is it? Like I see why they could be ending them. But then it's like if it was you and your family, you would want them to do whatever they can. But like, what are you just going to search forever for people? It's like it's hard. There's so many people and that's a tough area to be searching.
Well, it's like how many days do you say is enough is enough? Like how long before you call it off? Like,
7 days seems a little rough, but.
But it's like how long? I mean, it costs money to do that.
Especially knowing that it could have been an animal and stuff. But then, man, I don't know. It's a little odd.
In the news this week, the Have I Got News For You podcast is back for another series.
Brought to you by some of the team behind the show, we'll take you through the big stories of the week when the TV show can't.
From Kemi Badenoch to Keir Starmer, Donald Trump to Nigel Farage, we'll make sure to give every story and subject the complete lack of respect it deserves.
We also cover all the sillier stories you've missed that don't make the front page and put your news knowledge to the test with our missing words round.
Listen and subscribe to In the News This Week, the Have I Got News For You podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
This will kind of interest you, but so the national parks like Yosemite, Rocky Mountain National Park operate often as sovereign states with their own search and rescue teams, and with the exception of New Mexico and Alaska. But statutes that date back to the Old West stipulate that you're now the responsibility of the county sheriff in many places. And that's the truth, is like the county sheriff isn't necessarily equipped for search and rescue operations. Most of the time they're not. And they're the ones that are often responsible that the responsibility falls on in many of these missing persons cases, which is that, you know, is that the way that it should be? Should it be experts on staff for all these parks? Like Rio Grande National Forest has one full-time law enforcement officer. Ranger. Yeah.
That's it?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
One law enforcement officer. Because like most of it is nobody's there, but people hike it and people camp it and things like that. But there's only one law enforcement officer. Because I mean, it does come back to money, and do they have the finances to pay rangers and things like that?
Yeah.
And they don't. They actually keep slashing funding for the national parks and stuff.
Oh, totally. Like that's what I mean. And I don't mean disrespect to anyone by saying like after certain amount of time enough's enough, but like they literally can't afford to keep doing it, and it's because they're being cut so much.
So it's hard to just say like all the blame falls on the national parks and they're not doing enough. You can't really say that because they are trying to do I think what they can, but
and it's just such a different situation too, because when someone goes missing in a city, there's a lot more witnesses, there's places, there's like more leads and things to go off of. But when someone's just missing out in the wilderness and it's possible no one has seen them, I mean, it's a lot harder to do.
It's much, much harder.
Like, where do you even start?
No, you're right. And how do you know where somebody's going to end up either? Like, you can't even like really predict that, because it could be anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So here's some other craziness around this. So the Department of Interior, which we mentioned, who's responsible, oversees the National Park Service, knows roughly how many wolves, grizzly bears, wildlife roam its lands, but it can't keep track of the amount of visitors that disappear. Does that sound like a problem? Like they can keep track of animals, tag and all these other things, keep databases, make estimates.
That's
they
really
can't even make an estimate or even give you an idea of the number of people that go missing.
Is that just from like lack of communication between?
There's no database. There's no system.
That's ridiculous. And you'd think for something like that, too, because I'm sure people do just get naturally lost in there all the time. And you should have record of how many. They don't have any statistics of like how often it happens or nothing. That's pathetic.
They don't know.
That's weird to me.
They can't give any definite numbers at all. They have no way to track it.
That's bizarre.
The Department of Justice keeps a database for the National Missing and Unidentified Persons System, but reporting missing persons is voluntary in all but 10 states. And law enforcement and coroner participation is voluntary as well. So a lot of missing are also missing from the actual database, even the official database, because it's not even required to put them in the database.
That is bizarre.
Except for 10 states. So when David was interviewed by a publication called Outside, he said, "I don't put any theories in the books that he wrote. I just connect facts." Under unique factors of disappearances, he lists such reoccurring characteristics as dogs unable to track scents, the time late afternoon is a popular window to vanish, and that many victims are found with clothing and footwear removed. Bodies are also discovered in previously searched areas with odd frequency, sometimes right along the trail. Children and remains are occasionally found in improbable distances from the point last seen and improbable terrain. So basically in places where children could no way, shape or form get themselves to.
Right. That's super weird.
So some people find it tempting to just dismiss David Plaid's work and his books as just, you know, he's a kooky guy that thinks that there might be, you know, some cryptids or, you know, Sasquatch kidnappings or something like that. So he does get discounted by some search and rescue professionals, but his books are, in fact, extensively researched. On a large map of North America in his office, Politis has identified 59 clusters of people missing on federal wildlands in the U.S. and southern Canada.
That's interesting.
To qualify as a cluster, there must be at least 4 cases, according to his pins. So, if you ever visit Yosemite National Park, Crater Lake, Yellowstone, Grand Canyon, and Rocky Mountain National Parks, these are all
Those are all places clusters. We want to go.
Yeah, they are, because they're beautiful places.
It's got to be safe.
But it's never definitely where yourself. The well, that's the thing, is like
most of these people
you never go hiking by yourself ever. Like that's just like a rule of thumb with hiking being in the mountains in general, is just you never go anywhere by yourself because you're in the wild. Like would you go on an African safari by yourself? Like it's the same kind of thing. I mean, there's probably more animals in Africa, but you still got to worry about wildlife in the mountains. And I think a lot of people just don't think about that. Don't you?
Yeah, I do.
They don't even think that there's a chance. And now they don't even let, like Rocky Mountain National Park doesn't even let dogs in. You can't bring your dog in anymore.
Because they're worried it might attract.
It attracts mountain lions. Yeah. Mountain lions are here. They're like,
oh, it's prey. Yeah. No, I know. They've been coming down for a long time.
And I don't know exactly why that is. I don't know if the, like food is getting scarce.
I think that's what it is.
Or moving farther into their habitat, which I think is part of it. But they are mountain lions. Like I saw a video on Facebook in Conifer of a person just waking up in the morning and on their deck, 4 mountain lions, dude, 4 of them. And mountain lions are big, dude.
Wasn't there a case recently where someone like woke up and there was a bear or a mountain lion in their house? Like they went downstairs.
Yeah,
and was in the fucking kitchen.
Yeah, yeah.
There's been like even in like suburban neighborhoods, like bears going through backyards. I've seen so many times on the news where they're
showing video clips of bears in Colorado for sure. Of wildlife. And that's the thing is like maybe there's an increased number of people going missing because there's more wildlife around. But I mean, again, it doesn't explain many of these strange circumstances.
No.
And David Plaitis has actually spent hundreds of hours writing letters and Freedom of Information Act requests in an attempt to break through the National Park Service's red tape. He believes the Park Service in particular knows exactly how many people are missing but won't release the information, for fear that the sheer numbers and the ways in which people went missing would shock the public so badly that visitor numbers would go down. Mm. Honestly, I agree with that statement.
I think,
because I mean, come on, right? They know that, you know, they know numbers for animals and how much, you know, how many fucking bears are out there, but they don't know how many people go fucking missing. They actually do have a site that I'll link of like cold cases that are on their site. Like if you know more information, contact us here, things like that. But it's like a couple. It's not even, doesn't show you the mass amount of cases there are.
Super weird.
So here's kind of the most interesting part about this episode is where we get to talk about like what's really going on here. Like what's causes and theories for some of these missing person cases. So David Pilatus's take on this, we don't know for sure. We'll have to ask him when he's on the podcast at some point. And I don't know if he'll even give us a definite answer. I honestly don't think he will because he hasn't yet. So we don't really know exactly what his angle is, but I'm going to assume along with what a lot of other people think is that part of it is David thinks there is something, you know, darker, unseen that could be responsible for some of these missing persons cases. Because in 2013, Pilatus submitted two Freedom of Information Act requests to the National Park Service for records relating to two missing hikers in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park associated with possible Bigfoot abduction, is what the Freedom of Information Act request noted. So, to me, I think he thinks it's a possibility based upon the amount of work that he's done, the amount of evidence that he's found for there being some type of Bigfoot out there or half-human, half-bear type creature, which the whole thing with that, I think, is that if, when you have a half-human, half-bear as a creature or, you know, potentially hunting in our forests, it would make you think that they're probably more intelligent. And maybe they're able to like just swoop these kids up or people up and disappear without a trace. Maybe they're smart enough to do that. I don't know. That's just like, I'm just throwing that out there.
It's so hard to even like think because there's like no evidence. So it's literally just leaving you.
He has collected evidence and I think we'll either do a podcast about some of that or we'll wait till. Yes.
About the half and half. The half.
He has evidence for DNA. He claims to have
half human, half
Bigfoot DNA, things like that. Like he has, and a lot of people just say bullshit, 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 and like discredit him and say that, you know. So I haven't seen it myself. I would love for him to explain that part of it to us of things that he's found and what his, because
he comes across as very credible to me.
Absolutely. I mean,
I'm very interested to see what he has to say.
Why would he try to be, you know,
some people in this paranormal world just come across as bullshitters to me, but David Pilatus comes across as very serious about what he does. Very knowledgeable. He has
an investigative detective background.
Right.
So, you know.
I'd be super interested to hear what he thinks.
So, yeah. So a lot of people believe there might be something more sinister at play here that's responsible or perhaps paranormal happening to the missing persons inside of the national parks. These alleged commonalities in time, place, and circumstance of North American disappearances, David claims, are clues to a larger mystery. But some clusters, like people vanishing near water, are unremarkable. Water-related accidents are a common cause of death in the outdoors. Drowning has remained the number one cause of death in national parks over the last decade, which I believe 100%. And I think maybe even some of the cases we talked about, that could have been a drowning, could have been a thing, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
But there's other clusters of cases, he says, that are just completely wildly bizarre. Pilatus has described people melting into their clothing. He implies that children with disabilities are overrepresented among the vanished and that storms inexplicably tend to hit after someone has gone missing.
That's weird.
That's really weird.
What's
I'd love to hear more about that.
What's up with melting into their clothing? What does that mean?
I don't know exactly what that means. I'll have to ask him.
Whoa.
I'm assuming that it just means finding clothes and the person's gone.
So what if it's like aliens abducting people to do like research on?
That's one theory that I was going to throw out there. Like possibly.
I was thinking about it. If you were an alien, you wanted to abduct someone, you'd probably do it where no one else is around, which is in the middle of nowhere in these forests.
Yeah.
You know, all these people are normally by themselves. If they wanted to be like... Yeah, stealthy. It would allow you to not have like the big commotion of a UFO being over like a city.
No, absolutely
something.
Not. It's a perfect place to abduct somebody and then to either keep them or, you know, put them back or
Yeah.
It's very weird.
Would they have like just dropped the clothes back? That's so weird.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if in every case, but I think, I just think in missing person cases across the board, you got to consider possibly alien abduction. Because there's so many people that have abduction stories. It'll blow your mind the amount of people that claim to have been abducted by aliens or...
Yeah.
It's a lot of people. We just talked about a politician who said, like, acts like it was no big deal. Like, yeah, I was abducted. I got talked. Like, maybe this is a very real thing that's happening. Maybe this is... Like, I bet if we looked at a UFO sighting map versus, like, the clusters, I bet there's a lot of correlation.
I bet there 100%. Is, actually.
Actually, I already know because I know what the maps look like. And... A lot of UFO sightings do occur over national forest parks areas. So it's like, possibly.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's wild.
But one other thing I wanted to mention as well, as you said, people disappear and are found in the middle of berry bushes.
Berry bushes?
He said they go missing while picking berries and some are found while eating berries.
Interesting.
He said that the connection between some disappearances and berries cannot be denied. Which I think this is going back to the idea of a Bigfoot, or there's this creature.
Why? If you eat berries, the creature comes to you?
Maybe they eat berries, and maybe that's where... Maybe
they smell it?
No, just like maybe that puts you more at risk. Like maybe you're near somewhere where a Bigfoot has been, and...
That's so weird. What if they're like...
Because they're part bear. Bears like berries. Don't you know that? Like, they eat berries. Did you know bears go and they eat berries off of the trees?
Yeah.
So maybe Bigfoot likes to pick berries and eat them. So he's saying that there's a surprising number of people that go missing or are found in berry bushes. Which...
That's really weird.
Weird, but I mean...
Is that why they're called berries? Because bears like them?
Yes, Kendall. That's exactly why.
That's bizarre, man.
But some other theories for this is like serial killer or these or the victims are just victims of foul play, murderers running through the forest, which I mean, there's a lot of really questionable individuals that do reside in the middle of nowhere off the grid.
Yeah.
Like we mentioned, because it's a great place to be where you're, you know, kind of unseen from everybody else. So could there be serial killers running around the forest? Absolutely. Could they be picking off people? Absolutely. Like we mentioned, people that are sex offenders, sexual predators, oftentimes will live off the grid. So there could be, you know, again, the correlation back to human trafficking, things like that. There could be huge fucking camps like out in the middle of these national forests for all we know. Government related or not, there could be. Another thing that I think about when looking at all this is I think that one idea, if you guys remember Stranger Things with the secret program going on there, was kind of in the middle of the forest. There was like this military base, this top secret base where they were doing experimentation on humans. I think it's very possible that inside of these national parks and forests, there could be government facilities underground, maybe not underground, but hidden in these forests where these types of black ops programs are still being conducted because there's trillions of dollars missing from the budget. I mean, there's clearly shit going on. They're clearly still experimenting on humans. You think MK Ultra stopped? They're not trying to continue to figure out how to do that stuff?
No way. It's definitely continuing. There's no way they were just like, oh, this is unethical. We're going to be done now.
They have to do it somewhere.
Yeah.
Why not on their own federal land in the middle of nowhere where no one will ever find them, or a hiker might run across it and they can just pick them off.
That's so true.
And disappear. Because that's the thing is like a lot of people, there's literally no explanation for why they went somewhere in the forest and then just disappear with zero trace, no trace whatsoever, thin air.
That's so weird.
So my thought is maybe there's facilities where they're either, they're either doing human experimentation from whistleblowers. I've heard they're doing even genetic engineering where they're crossing humans with animal DNA, crazy things like that. I mean, that would be the place to do it. So could explain some of it. Or maybe they're just like some of the children are getting abducted and then put into some of these black ops programs that
raises them for their purpose. As crazy and wild as that sounds to some of you, like I've heard a number of different whistleblowers that corroborate this idea that they may take individuals at a young age and then do whatever and train them up for whatever their purpose is. And then, you know, never release them back or release them back years later, even.
Yeah.
Way, way, way later on. Like one of these kids might show up like 10, 15 years from now and be like, here I am. Like, what if that happens?
That would be so crazy. But then we'd at least know, like they could tell us, but
Or what if missing persons start showing up or are already integrated back into society after they've been through these programs and they're somebody else, new identity, new purpose.
They don't even know they've been brainwashed.
They
don't even know
they've even been brainwashed. That's another possibility.
Wouldn't they just kill them though? I mean, sorry, that was morbid, but kind of true.
I don't know, man. It's just, this all just blows my fucking mind. And
I know. It's very scary.
It's really hard to think about because we don't want to think the worst about this stuff, but I think you have to consider everything.
Yeah, I think so.
The government, aliens for sure. Another thing that I think we have to consider is this idea of kind of slipping through dimensions, possibly like coming across portals that might take you into another universe.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too.
A parallel universe. Like, what if some of these missing persons cases literally are plucked out of thin air?
Gone. Although I feel like I haven't seen many cases where that seems to be the answer. I don't know. I guess I don't know all of the cases out there, but from what I've seen.
Or there's multidimensional creatures that can't be seen. Some people believe like there's literally creatures that it's like Stranger Things, like literally like
they can take you that are
from
another
dimension, either put like bring you through or, you know, can just make you disappear. I don't know. Or this could all just be natural causes. This is just could be a result of being in the wilderness. I mean, if you think about it, it's like, you know, we go in the ocean all the time and, you know, we don't always like question people that go missing on the sea the same way that we do this. Because it's land versus sea. So you always assume drowning or
rare. Yeah, well, you can't like really look for evidence. So that's all you can really assume. But like with these cases, you can try to find remnants of them or something. So that's why it's so weird.
It is. So I just like, because the biggest thing is like, it's wild animals. Wild animals kill people every year. Let's see. I'm trying to find how many people are killed every year, but I don't even know if there's an... So during a study period, there were about 86 deaths annually from venomous animal encounters.
Just like out in the wild, or is it like trainers that work with animals?
It could be. I think it could be. I think it's wild animals.
People that tried to pet a fucking shark?
No, this could include pets and people that work with these types of animals.
Okay.
So that's venomous though. But what about like mammals? I mean, there's not even that great of numbers.
I feel like I never hear about that. Like an attack.
I think the statistic they gave in the movie was like there's been like 14 mountain lion fatalities like ever or like over a large period of time.
Yeah, I remember it was something really low too. That is so bizarre. I want to know what you guys think. Is there any like things that we didn't go over or ideas that you have or what theories do you lean towards the most? I definitely feel like I honestly might lean most towards like aliens. Or I guess human trafficking, something government. I don't know, though. I don't know. This is just one of those things where it's just... There's not anything pointing in one direction more than another.
Yeah, and I think David would probably agree with us. Like, there's just... It's unknown, you know? We're investigating the unknown here. But we think that it is something more than just natural causes for a lot of these cases because we don't have the evidence that we should... for an animal attack or something else or drowning or something like that. So it's a huge question mark. I mean, what the hell is happening to these people? Where are they going? You know, will we ever find more than what we found or find them at all? I mean, that's...
Man, I hope so. I can't imagine like...
That's what's so crazy about
having your loved one just... Oh, God. Especially like thinking about your loved one being attacked and like ripped apart by an animal. That's like gotta be so devastating.
Oh yeah. It's absolutely, I mean, I can't even imagine what it would be like to even think that or visualize that in your head of like your child being carried off by a mountain lion and mm-hmm. eaten for, you know, and like going out that way. That's really rough, man. That's really, really just tough to think about. But yeah, I mean, definitely let us know what you guys think. We definitely want to know your thoughts, theories on where these people are going, what you think of David's work. If you'd like to see David on the podcast at some point, definitely let us know in the comments. And
yes, that would be super fun.
Yeah, it would be super fun to just talk about this in more detail and hear more personal experiences from David.
Yeah,
on this.
I feel like he has probably so much more to share on this than us, because this is just like there's such a big question mark around it that it's hard to even do research.
Or I'm sure there's like crazier cases than the one we even covered, like that are in his books.
Well, there's tons of cases. Yeah,
tons of Well, there's 1,600 and counting.
Do you remember that case, Bryce Laspisa from California? He was like that redhead kid. He was driving home to his parents' house and pulled off into this like little ridgeway near a mountain. He wouldn't leave. They kept seeing him there. He kept not leaving. And then we looked it up, and there was a national park really close to him where he was. It was like really close, like a drive away.
What the hell?
I was thinking he was like being recruited into something.
Yeah.
Because the way he acted like he was like knew he was leaving. It was so, that case just keeps
it was
me
like
up.
He was weird. Told to be to meet there. Yeah, no, man. We could go on and on all day and down the rabbit hole on this, because
I know
there's just so many possibilities. But hopefully you guys enjoyed this episode of the podcast. If you did, like, subscribe, rate it, review us on iTunes. Really appreciate it. But yeah, guys, thanks for joining us for another episode of the Mile High Podcast with your hosts Kendall and Josh.
Yes, and we will see you guys next time.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART, or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.